Never. Never. And never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another and suffer the indignity of being the scum of the world. The sun shall never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. God bless Africa.
The Soviet Union, of course, played a key role in terms of assisting the liberation forces of South Africa.
The truth, though, is that without their support at the time, we would have really struggled quite a bit.
They have assisted many freedom fighters in this country, educationally, militarily, culturally.
Well, can you imagine the whole continent of France? This is wonderful.
Hello and welcome to this week's Africa Now show from Constitutional Hill in Johannesburg, South Africa. We're coming to you in the same week that this country is celebrating the anniversary of its first post-apartheid elections that resulted in Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, who once served time in this prison, being elected as South Africa's first black president. It was Mandela who said that the sun shall never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. But South Africa is not the only African country celebrating its freedom this month. Senegal, Zimbabwe, and others are also commemorating the occasion, and all are countries that achieved their independence with the help of the Soviet Union. April is Freedom Month across Africa, as in this month we celebrate the 65th anniversary of Africa Freedom Day, or Africa Liberation Day, in which eight independent African nations came together in Accra, Ghana. 5 years later, more than two-thirds of the continent was independent from mostly imperial European states. And now, 30 African countries came together in the Ethiopian capital to form what would later become the African Union. Our correspondent in Addis Ababa tells us more.
At this meeting, the Organization of African Unity was founded with the initial aim to encourage the decolonization of Angola, Mozambique, South Africa, and Southern Rhodesia. The organization pledged to support the work conducted by the freedom fighters and to remove military access to colonial nations.
Of course, our country, Ethiopia, contributes many in many directions for the as a model for the African. One is one of the Adwa victory is another model for another countries. When they see the African struggling with other outer countries invasion, Ethiopia is model for other African countries. Also, many leaders are emerging from Africa as a model, and the AU. AU is in Ethiopia. And even now our political leaders also a model for other African countries. They can learn from Ethiopia to be dependent and to use indigenous knowledge, natural power. But still now we are not using our powers, our geographical, our natural powers. But Ethiopia is a model.
Many scholars today argue that the physical control of European power ended in the 1960s. After independence of South Africa, the end of colonization was announced. But the Western imperialism not yet ended and continues in another form. Now the world system is established to serve the colonial master but not the colonized. So African countries, to secure full independence, they should work on reframing the system that benefit all. Bisrat Melese, RT, Addis Ababa.
Since the founding of the African Union, have African countries thrown off the yoke of Western colonialism? Is there a lot to celebrate or a long journey still to embark upon? Human rights lawyer Sipho Mantula weighs in on the question. Advocate Sipho Mantula, thank you so much for joining us here on Africa Now. This week we're celebrating Africa Freedom Month, but of course there's many questions related to that. If those founding fathers had to assess the progress that has been made in those decades, do you think they would be satisfied with the way the continent has moved forward?
It has been difficult for the continent because it appears that the freedom came with a high price, and that price was to sacrifice, was to reach consensus with the former colonial masters, and also was to look at, was freedom free, and also was independence or freedom. So I think the founding fathers will be worried about economic and cultural freedoms, because political freedom was attained in the 60s. But in the 21st century, I think they will have said, how far have we moved on economic and cultural freedoms?
And how would you answer that question? How far have we moved in terms of cultural and economic freedoms?
We have not moved, actually. We are still limping where there are challenges coming from an academic space, coming from a legal and human rights space. I've seen that many freedoms have been trampled. I've picked up that culturally we are still westernized, Europeanized, Arabized, you know. So you find that because the issue is to allow all cultures to be harmonized or to live in the same space. But for the continent to do an audit, it's also interesting when we talk of 20 years of the Africa peer review. Now the governance, for us to also measure our freedom, it's service delivery issues.
You can't really blame the colonial powers. I mean, we're talking about countries that have been independent for decades.
Yeah.
So why was that shift not made?
You know, a shift was also not made economically, hence the debate of the dollar. Now, economically, many African countries were not independent. Hence, you find that the independence and the freedom, you still have to use your former colonial master's currency. Are you aware that there's still a French colonial impact on them? There is still a French language that still exists in our even traveling documents. You look at your own South African passport, Republic du Sud. So it shows you that we are not yet free. They even manage our movement. So the issue of blaming also is not to blame for the sake of shifting the game. It's to say, accept that the colonial masters have done errors in the continent. Actually, this week at our university, we had a session where we were talking about Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi. And the issue that came was when Gaddafi asked the UN of reparations for Africa. I don't know whether you know that figure, how much he said.
No, I don't.
Because not many African countries, they don't talk about it. He was able to at least point out to say, Africa needs 7.7 trillion for reparation for what has happened. So you can see, Paula, the issue of blaming the colonial masters and the West comes from the issue of saying, accept and acknowledge what you have done.
Do you think that's realistic? Do you really think African countries are going to get reparations from their former colonial masters?
It has been difficult. Remember, we had a World Conference Against Racism in South Africa in 2001. It was on the debate. It was led by the African diaspora, Caribbean bloc. I think what we see now, we see return of cultural artifacts in Africa. And my concern is that the return of cultural artifacts have a value. There's a value on them. How do you quantify it?
Sipho, are you saying that pre- and post-colonial Africa is actually the same Africa?
Slightly we have changed with the addition of the South Sudan. The pre-colonial Africa with the kingdoms have changed drastically. The arrival of the Westminster system in the 60s, 70s, the 1990s, Washington consensus, elections all over Africa, moving away from multi-party from one-party state to multi-party democracy. Hence, I went back to my question, Paula, not my question, my assertion of, was it freedom or was it independence?
Part of the liberation of Africa and the reason why we've come to the point where we are, of course, has been the assistance of the Soviet Union in the liberation struggles. How important was the role of the Soviet Union?
They have assisted many freedom fighters in this country, educationally, militarily, culturally, because what I learned also in Russia, many Russian young scholars, they have passion for Africa. They visit African countries. They collect memoirs. They collect history books about Africa. So one can look at how Russia is also passionate about learning about Africa, and it's also important about Africans to learn about Russia.
And if we look at the relationship today between Russia and African countries, what can Russia do to help liberate Africa even further?
I think one of the key liberating aspects that Russia must go into, it must be cultural diplomacy and cultural revolution. You know, economic revolution. And that's where the issues of trade relations, empowerment, education. And remember, South African students, actually when I was there, what I've picked up, there were some students who were studying in Russia. And they were not studying law or economics. They were into agriculture. They were into energy sector. So you could see that what Russia must bring in the Sahel is to train the Sahel region, empower them, and move out. Simple, you know, for me is to not to stay long, you know, is to empower and also share knowledge, experiences. And that's how you can put the narrative of the image of Russia in global politics.
It is 29 years since South Africans from all walks of life and ages queued for hours in the hot sun, determined not to miss this country's first non-racial election. And like many other African countries, South Africa won its independence with the assistance of the Soviet Union. Our correspondent in South Africa looks back at that historic occasion and the role the USSR played in it.
I'm coming to you straight from Soweto in Johannesburg. Behind me is the Freedom Square, also known as the Open Air Museum, and it's dedicated to Walter Sisulu, one of South Africa's struggle heroes. This place tells the story of the drafting of the Freedom Charter in 1955. It also reminds us that assistance that the Soviet Union provided to the People's Liberation Army of Namibia and the African National Congress's military wing, Umkhonto we Sizwe, was essential in helping them fight against the apartheid government. No one has forgotten that help, least of all those who were involved.
Well, I joined the African National Congress and the South African Communist Party as a student, 20-year-old or so, at the time of Sharpeville, 1960, the massacre. There was no possibility of changing the apartheid system without revolutionary violence, without an armed struggle. So quite a number of us were sent out of the country, and I was sent with 150 other young people to the Soviet Union. We went there via Tanzania. We had to leave the country secretly. We arrived in the Soviet Union in Moscow, landed there at the beginning of 1964, and then we trained at a beautiful city on the Chorny More, the Black Sea, Odessa.
Just how much of a role do you think the Soviet Union played with all the other liberation heroes?
The Soviet Union, of course, played a key role in terms of assisting the liberation forces of South Africa, usually Africa. But we weren't the only recipients. The colonial system collapsed. The British colonies, the French, the Portuguese, Belgium, Dutch, all their colonies from Asia to Latin America and in Africa, the people rose up demanding the freedom that had been spoken about during the Second World War.
In other words, you're saying that if it wasn't for the Soviet Union, we would not have seen this liberation coming about.
It would have taken far longer with far greater sacrifice than occurred, because these former colonial countries, and they were colonial countries still after the war, they strove to cling on to their colonial possessions. So the people of Africa and so on, India, China and so on, they were pressing for freedom. And where the Soviet Union was able to give support, the Vietnamese struggle, for instance, that made the huge difference.
What do you make of Russia's relations with the African continent currently?
It's been very interesting.
You know that the EU and the NATO countries, the USA, made a huge error in trying to force sanctions to be adopted against Russia by Africa.
Demonstrations against the South African government's strict apartheid policies flare into shocking violence. At Sharpsville, an industrial township, thousands gather outside a police station in protest against new laws requiring every African to carry a pass at all times.
30 years on, Ronnie Kasrils and Mavuso Msimang are among those liberation heroes whose fight to bring freedom and equality to the tip of Africa with the help of their Soviet comrades will never be forgotten.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Mavuso. Maybe if you can just start by telling us how you joined the armed struggle and how you ended up in the Soviet Union.
I left South Africa in 1963 from Fort Hare University. I hardly finished anything there. This was a time of extreme political activity. I think we were in Francistown when the news came that the leadership of the African National Congress had been underground, had been arrested in Rivonia. That was June 11th, 1963. Oh, it was, a train smash. We flew out of Francistown to Dar es Salaam, and before long, we were on our flight to Moscow. It was around winter there. I remember seeing these people with the great army jackets and so on. So we went for highly specialized training in guerrilla warfare. We were trained by Soviet officers who had participated in the Second World War.
And just how much of a role did the Soviet Union play in the liberation of many African countries?
The Soviet Union provided a lot of, I think, financial. I didn't know quite about that, but they certainly provided material support as well as training, as I've been describing. Africa always helped us, but they have very limited resources. But they made their geographical space available to us, another diplomatic means of support. So the relationship with Russia now is not hostile and cannot be. I mean, they were always the nucleus of the Soviet Union. That's where the capital is. I'm saying the struggle changed. We no longer needed the kind of support that the Soviet Union had given us, but we retained very good relations with them.
Let's talk about freedom. What do you make of freedom? Do you think it's something that we can still celebrate today?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. A question does not merit asking. The 27th of April is the most important date on the calendar, on the South African calendar. There's no doubt about it. There is a huge difference between what happened before 1994 and what's happening. We have freedom.
During Africa Freedom Week, today's generation pays homage to the sacrifices and the struggles that made our freedom and democracy possible. Noluvuyo Khungi, RT, Johannesburg.
So why did the Soviet Union assist African liberation movements? I met with the Russian ambassador to South Africa, who presented the view from Moscow.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us here on Africa Now. This month is Freedom Month. Why was the Soviet Union even interested in being involved in Africa?
First of all, I should mention that we are interested in African friends. Russia, not to speak about Soviet Union, has never colonized any of the peoples, particularly in Africa. And we have always treated Africans as our friends, well, potential friends maybe. Well, can you imagine the whole continent of friends? This is wonderful.
Why did the Soviet Union choose to assist liberation movements?
Russian society is value-driven society. And in our hearts, in our minds, this notion of справедливость is a much broader one than is translated into English by justice or lawfulness or righteousness. It includes many moral aspects in particular. And we feel that if there is a just cause, if we can help, assist some people who are oppressed, then we should do it.
How did it assist them?
Well, as far as I know, it was done in many different ways. Now, to my mind, the aspect of supplying arms and training in military skills of training fighters is overemphasized. One of the fundamental principles of a socialist society was knowledge is strength. And I think that most importantly, most significant part of this assistance was training of African leaders, training of leaders of the liberation movements in different social sciences.
In South Africa, did your assistance to the African National Congress, the ANC, alienate you in any way from the Afrikaner community?
So not on the Russian side. Not on the Russian side. But I know I can feel it living here, that there is some alienation from the Boer community. In pre-Soviet times, Russian Empire, Russian people helped Boer in particular in their war against the British Empire in 1900-1902. There was a request from President Paul Kruger to Emperor Nicholas II to interfere in this war on the Boer side. Formal request was formally declined. The Tsar made it clear that he would not oppose some volunteers participating in it. For him, his family ties with the King George V were more important. And he so declined this request to enter the war formally. But about 270 Russian volunteers fought in the Boer ranks. And there was a hospital that was financed completely by the Russian Imperial Court, fully equipped, staffed, which operated, I think, in Newcastle. And there was another one that was financed 50-50 with the Netherlands. And then there was this elite school for girls established in Bloemfontein for border orphaned girls. And it was financed initially up to 1917 by the Russian Imperial Court. So manifestations of the sympathy of Russians with the Boer were abundant. The sympathy was very strong in the Russian public opinion in favor of Boers, because they were oppressed. So in Soviet times, we felt about the same with respect to the African population. It was unjust. It wasn't справедливо. This is why many people felt that we should interfere and that we were doing the right thing.
In 1980, Zimbabwe gained its independence from the United Kingdom. Our correspondent there, Keith Baptist, attended the celebrations, despite the feeling among many that Western oppression continues until today.
Zimbabwe celebrated its 43rd independence from its former colonial masters, Britain. We are in Harare, a place that played a vital role in the liberation struggle. Zimbabwe obtained its independence on the 18th of April, 1980.
With independence in Zimbabwe, I think there is the good side and the bad side. Independence obviously came with benefits that we all see. People are free to do whatever they want compared to the freedoms that the liberation heroes fought for. But there's also some things that we cannot overlook. For instance, high unemployment rate in Zimbabwe, largely among young people. Those are things that we would have loved the independence to come with also prosperity, because independence without prosperity, without employment and other supporting aspects to it is a bit compromised.
Independence means the freedom by us black people to take ownership of our country, of our resources. But sadly, 43 years after independence, we only managed to take the power, but we have not been able to change the systems. We now need to work collectively as Zimbabweans to ensure that we move over from the Eurocentric systems that we are still using to date, to come up with our own Afrocentric system that actually works for us. Because the system that we adopted from the Smith regime is oppressive, repressive, and suppressive. That is why sometimes the very same Europeans are nasty and hostile to us.
Well, it's a special occasion for the people of Zimbabwe, and most importantly, the young generation. Those who did not have an experience of the liberation struggle. It's a very, very positive reflection, because on this particular day, we are looking at the road that has been traveled thus far. The road towards independence was bumpy. It was not a walk along a garden path, but we are happy. And 43 years, we continue to be happy as we consolidate every step achieved by the independence. Of course, most importantly, under the Second Republic of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, we have been able to give to the world, and most particularly to the people of Zimbabwe, the true meaning of independence. Independence with the prosperity. Independence in ownership, total ownership of our resources, total ownership of our land, total ownership of our sovereignty.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we'll see the inauguration of King Charles to the British throne. We will again travel the African continent for reaction from former British colonies. As always, it's a pleasure to receive your feedback. Do stay in touch. Until then, from myself and the team, goodbye.